Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki. So today we are reading from Madhya Lila Chapter 8, the talks between the Lord and Ramananda Rai. And it's quite a long series of verses, 7 to 23. So I'll read the English translation for the first few verses, and then we'll recite 23 together. In this way, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited different verses from the Shastra. The priest of Lord Narsingadev then brought garlands and the remnants of the Lord's food and offered them to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As usual, a Brahmana offered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu an invitation. The Lord passed the night in the temple and then commenced his tour again. The next morning, in the great ecstasy of love, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started on his tour with no knowledge of the proper direction, and he continued the whole day and night. As previously, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu converted to Vaishnavism many people he met on the road. After some days, the Lord reached the banks of the river Godavari. When he saw the river Godavari, the Lord remembered the river Yamuna, and when he saw the forest on the banks of the river, he remembered Sri Vrindavan Dham. After performing his usual chanting and dancing for some time in the forest, the Lord crossed the river and took his bath on the other bank. After bathing in the river, the Lord walked a little distance from the bathing place and engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna. At that time, accompanied by the sounds of music, Ramananda Roy came there on a palanquin to take his bath. Many Brahmanas following the Vedic principles accompanied Ramananda Roy. According to the Vedic rituals, Ramananda Roy took his bath and offered oblations to his forefathers. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could understand that the person who had come to bathe in the river was Ramananda Roy. The Lord wanted so much to meet him that his mind immediately began running after him. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was running after him mentally, he patiently remained sitting. Ramananda Roy, seeing this wonderful sannyasi, then came to see him. Srila Ramananda Roy then saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be as brilliant as 100 suns. The Lord was covered by a saffron garment. He was large in body and very strongly built, and his eyes were like lotus petals. When Ramananda Roy saw the wonderful sannyasi, he was struck with wonder. He went to him and immediately offered his respectful obeisances, falling down flat like a rod. The Lord stood up and asked Ramananda Roy to arise and chant the holy name of Krishna. Indeed, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very eager to embrace him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then inquired whether he was Ramananda Roy, and he replied, "Yes, I am your very low servant, and I belong to the Shudra community." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then embraced Sri Ramananda Roy very firmly. Indeed, both the master and the servant almost lost consciousness due to ecstatic love. And that brings us to today's verse. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Their natural love for each other was awakened in them both, and they embraced and fell to the ground. Purport: Srila Ramananda Rai was an incarnation of the Gopi Vishakha. Since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Lord Krishna himself, there was naturally an awakening of love between Vishakha and Krishna. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the combination of Srimati Radharani and Krishna, and the Gopi Vishakha is the principal Gopi assisting Srimati Radharani. Thus, the natural love between Ramananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu awakened and they embraced. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Namo Vishnu Vilaya Krishna Krishna Yamutala Vishnu Vite Nandana. So a very nice set of interactions between two exalted personalities, both in the actual Bhoma pastimes and also as a reflection of their original positions in the spiritual world. So of course, Ramananda Roy was unknown to Lord Chaitanya. He had not met him at this point. And he was made aware of his existence, his glories by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. In the previous chapter, the pastimes of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya in Puri were described. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a leader of sorts. He was a great Mayavadi, and he had a great following and students, etc. But after some time in the association and the company of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he understood the real essence of personal loving relation with the Lord, something that he had been oblivious to before. And in such was his spiritual development and his development of spiritual ecstasy that he became able to relish transcendental mellows of devotional service very, very quickly. This all happened in the presence of Mahaprabhu. And he assisted Mahaprabhu in many ways, rendered him service. And finally, when he was leaving, he requested Mahaprabhu. He said, I know you're about to start your South India tour, and this is the tour that was referred to in the earlier verses. Mahaprabhu begins a tour of South India from Jagannath Puri. And he said, I want you to meet this person who lives on the bank of the Godavari. His name is Ramananda Roy. Don't dismiss him when you first see him. He appears to be a simple worker in the government, nothing special. And of course, Mahaprabhu typically did not like to meet worldly people, people who are interested in the mundane affairs of this world or whose lives were preoccupied with the mundane affairs of this world. So Mahaprabhu would naturally be very cautious about such persons. But on the appeal of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he had in his mind that here is a great person, because he had heard from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that this person is an expert in mellows, an expert in describing transcendental mellows. And Lord Chaitanya's entire existence was all about experiencing, relishing, and glorifying transcendental mellows, the dealings between Radha and Krishna. So he traveled as requested, and on the banks of the Godavari, we read the pastimes. We read something about Mahaprabhu's own his own meditation, his mistaking of various features for features of Vrindavan. Because of course Mahaprabhu is Mahaprabhu, he's Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this world. He's Sri Krishna himself, Krishna Varanam Tusha Krishnam Sango Pangastra Parshadam Yagnai Sangirtana Prayer Yajantihi Sumedasa. So we know that he comes to this world. He's Krishna himself, but he comes in a beautiful golden form with the complexion and mood and sentiments of Srimati Radharani. So he comes to this world, but he does remain Krishna himself. And so while he's seeing all these different features. He sees the river Godavari and he mistakes it for the Yamuna. He sees a beautiful forest and he mistakes it for Vrindavan, the transcendental forest of Vrindavan. And this is a constant feature of Mahaprabhu's meditation throughout the CC stories. You will see it. He's always mistaking something, mistaking a hill for Govardhan Hill. And so many wonderful pastimes take place because his consciousness is always in Vrindavan. His consciousness is always with Srimati Radharani. His consciousness is always with the gopis. And we were given a little insight into the dealings of one gopi, Vishakha, today. Vishakha, of course, is always spoken in connection with Lalita, the two chief sakis, the two chief confidants of Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani is the divine consort of Sri Krishna, the original female. God for us is male and female, not exclusively male. Because in Radharani, the Lord has deposited all loving sentiments and the reservoir of all happiness. So Srimati Radharani becomes that personality who is the full embodiment of expertise in pleasing Krishna. Krishna is the object of worship, he is the object of pleasure, and Srimati Radharani is the means and the full ability, the Ladini Shakti of the Lord, the pleasure-giving potency of the Lord. So in this connection, Srimati Radharani, and in the spiritual world, it's not two persons on their own having fun. Everyone in the spiritual world is all connected to Krishna and Srimati Radharani. And so Srimati Radharani has her friends. She has her confidants. She has Vishakha. She has Lalita. She has Tungavidya. She has so many others. We understand there are eight principal sakhis who assist Srimati Radharani and Krishna in various ways. They have different duties that they do. They make arrangements. They facilitate the meeting of Krishna and Srimati Radharani. And they speak certain things that will evoke certain mood and sentiments. And this becomes apparent in the later pages of this chapter. This chapter is talks between the Lord and Ramananda Roy. And so they go into extensive details about this as the story continues. But here we are informed that Ramananda Roy is Vishakha and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. And so you can see how there is an enactment, a reflection of the Vrindavan pastimes taking place here. Just as Mahaprabhu says that Sachimata is his original mother, she has been his mother in many appearances in the past, even as Krishna. So Sachimata appears in Gauranga Leela to assist the Lord. So Krishna, now in the mood of Srimati Radharani, also has all his other assistants there with him. Gadadhar Pandit is there, manifests as Radharani. And Vishakha and Lalita are there, the servants, the assistants. So here it's mentioned that there is a natural connection between Krishna and Vishakha. And therefore there is a natural attraction between Lord Chaitanya and Sri Ramananda Roy. This is a little glimpse of the spiritual world. The spiritual world is quite different to the material world. It's a different place. The situation is different. The place is different. The people are different. The activities that they engage in are different. Quite different to what goes on here in this world. The spiritual world is described by Lord Brahma as Chintamani Prakara Sadma Sukalpa Vriksha Laksha Vriteshu Surabhira Vipalayantam Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sambramya Sevyamanam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bajami. The spiritual world is a transcendental abode where there are Kamadhenu cows, Kalpa Vriksha trees, wish fulfilling trees. The entire place is glistening. Lord Krishna is there, surrounded and served by millions of gopis and lakshmis. It's a completely transcendental place. And Vishakha is one of those gopis. And so in that transcendental abode, there are none of the problems that we experience here in this world. This world is a troublesome place. Even if one is having a good time here in this world, it is still a troublesome place. When you step back for a moment and view the situation from a higher perspective. Krishna says, A Brahma Bhuvanal Loka Punaravartina Arjuna Mamu Petyat Kaunteya Punarjanmana Vidyate. He says, right from the topmost planet of Brahma down to the lowest, all of them are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. Even if some of us may be fortunate enough to have a good time while we're here in this world, that certainly isn't experienced by everyone in this world. You just switch on the news, you will hear some doom and gloom happening practically in every corner of the world, in every report, severe problems. So many people are suffering tremendously. But if by some fluke, by some luck, some people are actually having a good time, well, they won't be having a good time when the time of death comes. Or when old age comes, or when disease comes. You may be the richest person, the strongest person, the most powerful person. You're not spared from these things. Birth, old age, disease and death accompany every single world, every single person in this world. And all of them are absent in the spiritual world. There's a complete difference. Krishna says that in this verse that one who understands that this is a place of misery, and one who knows that my abode is something different, such a person can come to my abode. Punaravartina arjuna mamu petya tu kaunteya punarjanmana vidyate. When one comes to my abode, There is no further birth or death. So therefore, the desire to go to the spiritual world is a feature of most devotees' inspiration. And so we are given a little window. Prabhupada said often that these paintings, initially painted by Jadurani and then others, they are windows into the spiritual world. They're like little framed screens which give us an insight into the spiritual world. We can see here, just in front of me, we have this vision of the Brahmanda, the entire cosmic manifestation with multiple universes emanating from the body of Mahavishnu. And then we have in the center, you have this magnificent planet of Goloka, Vrindavan, where Radha and Krishna and all the sakis and the confidants and all the servants, Lakshmis and Gopis are present and are interacting. They are playing, for want of a better word. Because Krishna doesn't have a job description. He doesn't have to do a 9-to-5. He doesn't have to complete any activities. Anything he does is play in the spiritual world. Radharani simply interacting with Krishna, helping Krishna to have a good time. And there is such pleasure exchanged in that process by both persons, by everyone actually. And that's the secret. Because when we change our perspective from trying to give pleasure to ourselves, and we try instead to give pleasure to the supreme abode of pleasure, Krishna, we experience pleasure more than we can ever imagine. Now that's a secret. It's a secret. It doesn't make mathematical sense according to the mathematics of this world. But it's a fact. And it's a fact that is known to the devotees only. To the devotees, to Krishna, and is revealed to us through scripture. So if we are going to understand something about the spiritual world, we can take knowledge from these sources that Krishna has mercifully provided. This world is the opposite in one sense. Urdvam gacchanti sattvasta madhyam tishtanti rajasaha. It's urdvamulam adashakam. It's the opposite. It's a reflection. The analogy is given that there is a tree. But when you look in a lake, a reflection of the tree in the lake, it appears upside down. The branches appear to be at the bottom and the trunk is near the top. So the same features, but you can see the same features are present in the reflection and in the substance. It's the same is there with the spiritual world and the material world. Anything we find here in the material world has its genuine existence in the spiritual world. It is there in some form. Otherwise, how can it be here? Because the spiritual world is the source. But it is in a perverted way, in a reflected way, in a twisted way. In the spiritual world, there is no sense of time that causes decay. But here in this world, there is. It decays. It causes everything to decay and disappear. Everything becomes degraded by the passage of time. In the spiritual world, no such effects take place. Time is available for use to facilitate pastimes. So understanding that there is a clear difference between this abode and the place we're in now is very useful. Because it's like a brochure for a holiday destination. You know, you go to the Bahamas, why? Because you see nice scenery, you see hammocks, you see sand, you see the ocean. And it's a vision. After days and nights and weeks and months spent in dreary London where it rains every day, you imagine a place where there's the ocean breeze, you can just relax, nothing to do. So the spiritual world, as revealed here, is like that brochure. The brochure of a place which is idyllic. But there is one difference between the typical heavenly conception and the spiritual world that we're describing here. Most people, when they hear of a place like this, the spiritual world with transcendental jewels and touchstones, and no shortage of anything, no need for any money, but abundant wealth, they think, oh, I would like to go there, and I would like to enjoy myself. I'd like to go there, and I would like to enjoy. I'd like to try all these things. I'd like to go up to a cow and say, deliver this for me. Or go to the Kalpa Riksha tree and say, I would like the latest iPhone. That's what people may imagine they would like to do. But actually the residents there have no such ideas. They may go to one of these providing outlets and they may say, please give me these flowers so that I can make a garland and worship Krishna. Please arrange this so that I can utilize that to serve Krishna. There is only one thing in the spiritual world, a collective mood of wanting to serve and please the Supreme Lord. There even, they sometimes forget that he is the Supreme Lord, because they're only interested in giving him pleasure. So the notions of grandeur, opulence or magnificence and hierarchy, they also disappear. When Krishna and Radharani are interacting, they very much forget who each other is, are. Radharani doesn't think, you're the my worshipable Lord, I'm going to bow down before you, the Supreme God, please be merciful to me. No, she chastises him. She winds him up sometimes. She relishes great loving pastimes with Krishna, which can only happen on that platform of equality. And so one very special feature that is revealed to us through Mahaprabhu's teachings and through the Vedic literature in general is the existence of interaction with the Lord. We typically have an idea of God being great, almighty, powerful, munificent, merciful. From many different faiths in this world, those teachings are made. They're there in the Bible, the Quran. All great scriptures of this world have these levels of information. But something special is supplied by the Vedic wisdom. And that is the understanding of what one does with the Lord. What are the details of that reciprocation with the Lord? And it is not just in the matter of servant and master, supplier and receiver. It's not just like that. There are five rasas that are described: Shantaras, Dasyaras, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, and Premaras, Madhuryaras. The platform of Shantaras is neutrality, where one is connected to Krishna, but there is a sort of a neutral connection. There is not an active engagement. And so examples of this can be the grass, the trees, the creepers in Vrindavan. They're there with Krishna, but they don't directly interact. You don't have an interactive relationship. Although things aren't quite that straightforward in the spiritual world. There is something else that happens. Then you have sakyaras, friendship. Here in this world, you know, we have friends. We interact with people. Boys play at school, they fight with each other, they do things. So Krishna also does that. That propensity is there. Propensity of friends. Amongst friends, there is equality. You play, you fight, you share jokes, you console each other. That's friendship. So Krishna also has that relationship with certain devotees. Then you also have vatsalya. You have vatsalya ras. You have parental relationship. The rasa a parent experiences with their child. Rasa means mellow, a certain mood of exchange. The rasa any parent in this world experiences with their child is different. It's a different experience. There is a great exchange of love, but it has a different flavor. The child has a certain rasa with the parents, but it's different to the rasa they have with their friends. And so vatsalya is another rasa. Dasya rasa, of course, is the servitude rasa, where one serves the Lord. And here it's mentioned that the Lakshmis and Gopis are serving Krishna. Well, they are. And so Krishna has multiple servants. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arasava Vritti, it said. There is one Supreme Lord, the Supreme Controller, and everyone else is his servant. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nandaki. Everyone else is his servant. But that's not all. We also have another rasa, the rasa of Madhurya rasa. And that is the conjugal rasa, the relationship between two lovers, the relationship between husband and wife, the relationship between boyfriend and girlfriend. And that is Krishna and that is Srimati Radharani. That is the rasa that is predominant exchange between the two. Now, of course, you can see that that rasa also includes all of the other rasas. There is clearly a sense of caring for the beloved. There is a sense of servitude. There is a sense of friendship. So progressively we say these are higher and higher rasas. And Srimati Radharani is the embodiment or the owner, you can say, of the topmost of the rasas, Madhurya Ras. And her assistants, the Sakhis, the Gopis, they assist both Krishna and Radharani in coming together. So that is the spiritual world. It's a different place, with different persons, with different notions. And it's the place where we actually belong originally. We're supposed to be there in the realm of eternity, in the realm of all bliss, all knowledge. But instead, we've ended up here in this world where exactly the opposite is found. It's a very ignorant place. We're all ignorant. We hardly know anything. Little bit we study, we learn during time at school, university. And still there is vast quantities that we have no clue about. We're not eternal. We know we're going to die. We know the body is decaying every moment. And we're certainly sat-chit anand, and we're certainly not happy constantly. There are periods of happiness, periods of distress. We're not supposed to experience distress. No one likes it. No one needs to be trained to dislike distress. A baby naturally cries when there's a distressful situation, when it's hungry, hot, or something. No training was given for that. These are innate qualities. And they come from our innate situation of not wanting distress, because it's not part of our nature. In the spiritual world, it's ananda only, enjoyment, bliss. That's our situation, connection with Krishna, the reservoir of bliss. How can there be anything other than happiness when you're connected to the full reservoir of happiness? That's Krishna. So through these descriptions, we get to hear about Krishna's abode. And the question is then, what can we do about that? First of all, do we desire to go there? That's a question. After such descriptions, after seeing the brochure, we develop a desire to go there. But then there's a process by which that happens. There's a process by which we understand more about the spiritual world, have details given to us. We learn about Krishna. The spiritual world is a place where Krishna is at the center. So if we're going to understand something about the spiritual world, we need to understand something about Krishna. So Krishna says in the Gita, he says, janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tattvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam iti sorjana. One who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never takes his birth again in this material world. He comes to my abode. So we just have to understand Krishna. We have to understand his activities. When he appears in this world, is his appearance just like a normal person, like one of us? That's what we have to understand. Because many people have made this mistake. Despite being presented with descriptions of Krishna, descriptions of God, they say, oh God, he's just another, maybe an extra powerful person, some special person with special powers, special abilities. He's just one of us, just a bit bigger than us, a bit more powerful, a bit richer. That's him. But that's wrong. Gita says, he's nothing like us. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanamam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. One who understands Krishna, that's called a mahatma. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanamam mam prapadyate. After many, many births, somehow one comes to an understanding of Krishna as the supreme transcendental Lord. Such a person is rare. It's a process that takes place over births, over many lifetimes. We cannot suddenly alter our vision from our position as enjoyer of the material world to servant of Krishna instantly. We don't even know why we should do that. And that's natural. That's why we are given scripture. We are given devotees. We're given this insight into a different world that's possible. Most people in this world have no idea that if they do not labor very, very hard for their own sense gratification, that they will have something else to do. They think there is nothing else to be done except this. Whereas if they understood that by satisfying the Supreme Lord, by learning to understand the existence of the Supreme Lord, our temporary difficulties here can just be completely erased, comprehensively erased, not just suppressed. You might delay the progression of the virus by wearing masks, vaccines, but one scientist the other day said, actually, we have to give up this idea that we will be able to delay it indefinitely. Eventually, everyone will get the virus. So in spiritual life, in material life, it is a similar case. We can stay here in this world. We can carry on doing the same things, the same activities, the same duties, the same aspirations, the same material goals, the same material agendas. It will never stop. We can try to delay the situation, improve it a little, by trying to improve the world, by trying to construct houses that provide us complete climate control so that we never have to know what's outside. We can do that. We can create playgrounds. Srila Prabhupada once said that when he went to New York and saw the big skyscrapers, he said, this is adults' playground. These contrivances, these contraptions, these constructions, they are the toys of the adults. Children have small toys. They build sandcastles, they do things like that. Adults build big things like this. But they delay. They don't solve anything. They give you a little distraction from the reality. The reality is that this world is a troublesome place and there is repeated birth, death, old age and disease. So if you create for yourself an elaborate arrangement where you don't have to think about those things for as much as possible, what happens is it will come to you eventually anyway. You can't pretend that just by not thinking about it, it has disappeared. The reality is the reality. You might be happy in your situation in the world, with your level of wealth, with your facilities, with your power. Next birth, you could be in some tribe, in some part of the world, where life is very, very different. Completely different. For the soul, as it transmigrates, there is no attachment to a particular culture, community, nation, language, everything that we consider very valuable today. Nothing. The soul has nothing to do with those things because the soul is spiritual. Next birth can be something completely different. It can be all the things we don't like. And that is determined by karma. Now imagine that. You work hard all your life creating a nice situation in this world. And the consequence of all of that karma that has been accrued through our piety and impiety means we get a certain appearance, birth in the next life, and that's nothing like what we actually want. We have to question whether our efforts were worthwhile. At least we can see that whatever we build in this world here doesn't go with us. We leave it all behind. That much anyone can see. At the time of death, your house, your property, your relatives, they all stay and you go. It was never yours. Any of those things were never really yours. You had them. You used them. You interacted with them during your time here. So what is that eternal principle that is ours eternally? That is worth pursuing. That is worth exploring. Rather than a distraction, it's worth to explore the eternal principle. And that eternal principle is that we are intimately connected with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Spirit, the Supreme Person, purely spiritual, and so are we. And because we have forgotten that, we're here in this world where constantly things happen that we don't like. Constantly things are going on that we don't like. So the spiritual abode is there. We can learn about the spiritual world. We can also develop some qualification to go to the spiritual world. It's not such a cheap thing. It's very fashionable these days in this age of gurus and spiritualists that every person, after a little engagement in some sort of spiritual practice, considers themselves to be an expert. Considers that, yes, now I'm qualified and I am going to make my own philosophy now to accompany my newfound lifestyle. Well, spiritual truths are never concocted by anyone. People don't like that because most of our lives we spend concocting in our minds a world, an image of reality, which we then operate within. We do that our entire lives. You may know some people are so detached from reality. Everything, something goes on in their mind and that's the world they live in. Occasionally that world that's in their mind clashes with the reality of the material world and they don't like it, so they forget about it. And they resituate themselves in their imagined state. That is common for almost all people. It's not an extreme case. We each of us have made an image of the world in our minds. And at times it contacts with reality and at times it doesn't. And that's how we keep a certain illusion going, life after life after life. And each birth gives us a chance to experience a new flavor of illusion, a new special combination of happiness and distress, facilities. So the question is asked by spiritual persons, how can I get out of this cycle? How can I actually go back to the spiritual world where this entertainment and great trouble and stress also stops? And that is, of course, the process of spiritual life. It's very nice that for those on the seven-day monk experience, you've had a whole immersion experience, hopefully of a different lifestyle, of a different way to view the world. This is the start and a very substantial investment in our ultimate spiritual progress, to actually view a different concept of reality, a different concept where God exists, where He's there, not just as some words on paper or as some tool to give us something during the course of our life, but rather He is a person with whom we are ultimately and intimately connected eternally. Eternally means two things. It means before and also after. After is understood by many persons, but they don't accept before necessarily. We have existed eternally before and we will exist eternally after. That's eternity. And that's the reality. So through Krishna consciousness, we can slowly, steadily start to hear about the spiritual world, start to develop an attraction for the spiritual world. Then we start to engage in a set of practices, activities that will help us to become qualified for the spiritual world. And that is the process of devotional service. So Prabhupada always spoke about devotional service. When we do something for the Lord, render some service, because it is our natural tendency, render some service to the devotees, render some service to Krishna, we are creating for ourselves the pathway to the spiritual world. And once we're on that path, it becomes a relishable experience. Devotees relish this practice, this path. It's not a troublesome affair. It's a very enjoyable activity. How many devotees have you met in your 7 days who are constantly gloomy or miserable or depressed? Not many, hardly any. And certainly if they've managed to continue following the practices of Krishna consciousness for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, you can see that there is something of real substance there. It's a dynamic process. It's not a process of just be quiet and just accept this and sit in your corner and pray for a bit and that's it. You can see it's a completely different realm. It's a realm of active engagement, active questioning. We welcome questions. Devotees welcome questions. The Shastra encourages us to question. It doesn't say, shut up and just believe this. Question everything. Krishna, why is he Krishna? Why is Radharani there with him? Why is Krishna blue? All questions which everyone has a right to ask and can be answered by those who have some knowledge of Shastra. So this is spiritual world. This is a spiritual process that takes us to the spiritual world. It allows us to progress. It allows us to be happy. It saves us from all the distress of misconceptions that we have in this world. And so this is the mood that Mahaprabhu is relishing while he's here in this world. His mentality is somewhere else. His consciousness is somewhere else. And so we can also be like that. That while we are here in this world with all its difficulties and challenges, and you know the challenges aren't decreasing day by day. There's some new campaign, new agenda every other day, new dissatisfaction. That's just going to continue. We need to give up the idea that that's ever going to stop. Prabhupada jokingly said, the United Nations was formed as a body to unite all the nations of the world after the wars. But he says that what we see every year is that the number of flags are increasing. Do you see that contradiction? Number of flags are increasing, which means more disunity. So he said, despite all attempts, and this is just one example, certainly great things are done through these organizations and other groups, but they cannot solve the ultimate problem. The problem of the propensity to fight based upon a perceived limit of resources is always going to go on in this material world. And the proof of the pudding, have the number of wars decreased? No. They've increased. Practically every part of the world has some major conflict going on right now. It's increased steadily since the time the organization was formed. There is practically world war going on right now, just not in a unified world way with a label. But so many countries are in a state of fear, anxiety, or actual war. So material means by which we delay the inevitable, by which we try to suppress, they have a limited effect. They do have a good effect. They have an effect. We should be sensible. We should take precautions. We should be careful. We should not consider that those in themselves will solve our problems. That is simply not possible. Prabhupada said the only solution to a material problem is the ultimate spiritual solution. Leaving this place of birth, old age, disease and death. That is the way to solve our problems. Okay, I'll stop there for today. If there are any questions or comments. Yes, Matthew? Actually, is a mic coming?
When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked Lord Chaitanya to see Ramananda Roy, he was very keen. But when the devotees asked him to see Maharaj Pratapruja, he really waited a long time, and then he saw his son before. So I know Ramananda Roy was like on a very exalted level, but they were both working in the government.
They were. I was thinking about that pastime as well, because Maharaj Prataparudra was the king in Puri, and he was a devotee of the Lord. But Mahaprabhu refused to see him for quite some time. I would see it all as part of the extensive Leela of the Lord. The Lord allows different pastimes to take place with different people. We can see numerous pastimes the Lord engages in his appearances as Krishna and then as Vamandev, and all the other forms that the Lord appears. He engages in interactions with his devotees, and not all of them are exactly the same. He will fight with one of his devotees, Bhishmadev. They will have a good fight on the battlefield. Other devotees he will very carefully cherish, nurture and protect. When we see different behavior with King Prataparudra and Ramananda Roy, we shouldn't necessarily see it as a difference of the Lord's behavior or a certain partiality. In one sense, there is a difference because Vishakha Devi is of a different category. The eight principal gopis are manifestations of Srimati Radharani directly. She manifests those forms to assist her in the process of serving Krishna. We can also see that Srila Ramananda Roy was, in one sense, more accomplished and more advanced by one criteria than King Prataparudra. King Prataparudra was, he had all the trappings of responsibility of being a king upon him, which means all the engagement with wealth, all the interactions, all of the responsibilities to the state, the responsibility to fight, perhaps some other kingly activities which are not so conducive for spiritual life. And so Mahaprabhu was, with him in particular, setting a very strong lesson to others. Sometimes Mahaprabhu used a particular devotee and behaved very strangely with them in order to set an example for others. And so all of those around King Prataparudra could see that Mahaprabhu, who is only interested in spiritual life, wants nothing whatsoever to do with worldly materialists. And the king represents the highest sort of position of that, the highest enjoyer. So even materially, Ramananda Roy is kind of at a lower level of material prestige than King Prataparudra. He's an assistant in the government. He's a government servant. So he's not quite so heavily engaged. So in terms of the visible status, there's a difference. Then there's also the recommendation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And his recommendation was based upon the specific strong bond that they formed. Now, of course, in Mahaprabhu's Leela in Puri with King Prataparudra, it is eventually by the mercy of the devotees that finally King Prataparudra managed to massage Lord Chaitanya in that garden, you know, after the Ratayatra festival. And that was a special arrangement, the culmination of years of anticipation. Years of anticipation and neglect. So that anticipation itself is a leela. That anticipation, that meditation on when will I be able to be with Krishna? I'm so unfortunate. When will that chance come when Krishna considers me worthwhile to even give me a drop of his mercy? That is a part of progress as well. So I would say there are different flavors. Although the actions seem quite different by our material standards, internally something else is going on. Krishna leaves Radharani and all the gopis in Vrindavan and goes off to Mathura, a seemingly dreadful act. But internally he never leaves them. And their remembrance, their reminiscence of him increases and expands to the extent that even while Krishna is in Dwarka and in other places, all he does at night is chant the names of the gopis. So he's left them physically, but he's constantly thinking about them. So Mahaprabhu, his behavior, his activities, he's the Supreme Lord, and he does some very unusual behavior. The Supreme Lord is not expected to behave normally. So when the Supreme Lord comes and he exhibits special relations, special evokes special moods with his devotees, it is to facilitate a special unique exchange. I don't know if anyone else can add something. Kartik Chandra Prabhu is here. Would you like to add any? Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Dhruna Prabhu is in that corner.
Thank you, Prabhu. It's not really a question, but maybe. You mentioned different rasas with Krishna at the beginning. And often, sometimes you maybe kind of wonder, what if I end up as a whatever stone, river, or tree in a spiritual world? But this Shantarasa, the spiritual world, is something way beyond, actually doesn't exist, because it's made of Chintamani, entire spiritual world. Everything has full capacity to exchange with Krishna, emotionally, Krishna had a conversation with his jewelry, asking, are you happy with me? And then if he's happy, then jewelry is more happy. So this exchange is completely, there's nothing unconscious or dead in the spiritual world. So if facilitates Krishna to become a speck of sand that he can walk on and enjoy in that way, or take, or become pebble which Krishna can play with it, throw it, or be cooling river where Krishna can enjoy there. One becomes there. One can have multiple forms there, but this Shantarasa in spiritual world actually doesn't exist in real sense, like in Vaikuntha or somewhere else. It's full exchange with Krishna emotionally. Every speck of dust is there. Yeah? So that's a spiritual world. It's not something to be.
Well, that's a dimension of it. But Shantarasa does exist. It's mentioned.
It does exist, but like a quality exist. Of it in spiritual world is full emotional exchanges. And crowds crying.
No, in the spiritual world, Shantarasa is also found. You remember when I was giving you that list? I said that Shanta means normally a sort of an exclusiveness, but not quite. So yes, there is that interaction. And specifically where Krishna's presence manifests at the highest levels. Now, what you're referring to, Goloka, is a special realm. Goloka namni nijadhamni talecha tasya devi mahesha haridhama suteshu teshu. In the different graded realms within the spiritual world and material world, there are three levels. Goloka Vrindavan, Vaikuntha planets, then you have Mahesh Dham, then you have Devi Dham. In Goloka, yes, there might be a full, exclusive,
Goloka Vrindavan.
But that is not the only spiritual world. Haridham, the Vaikuntha realm, is also the spiritual world. It is also the realm where there are unlimited forms of the Lord interacting with their devotees. There is a place, if someone has a particular attraction to Matsyadev, there will be a place where Matsyadev is predominant. Shantarasa is mentioned. It exists. It's a rasa. It is there in the spiritual world. It is said that devotees do not desire Shantarasa. That is also what our acharyas tell us, which means it must exist. It is an option. But devotees do not desire it. Why? For exactly the reasons you've said. That there isn't that exchange of mellow. There isn't that exchange of interaction, that feeling. I like to think of Shantarasa as having some sort of parallel with liberation. Liberation is sort of a more of a neutral. Not quite. It's not quite the same thing. To be in the Brahma Jyoti is not the same as Shantarasa on the planet of the Lord. But nevertheless, the Bhagavatam does say that Salokya Sarshti Samipya Sarupya Ikatvami Apiyuta Diyamanam Nagrinanti Vinamat Sevanam Jana, that there are five types of liberation, some of which are coming very close to her. And they include even having the same form as the Lord. Salokya, his place, Sarshti, his opulence, Samipya, Sarupya, his form, Ikatvam, oneness. The devotees don't even desire those. You don't even desire a form, opulence, power like the Lord. Why? Because it acts as a preventative barrier to relish service to the Lord. So the devotees are expert in rejecting everything that doesn't allow one to be directly contacted with the Lord. So when we have a vision from that highest realm, if you like, when we have that sort of Goloka vision, we might think that nothing else exists, but there is a spectrum. Other options are also available. And some people are attracted by those options. Some people have had enough of activity in this world and they said, I would just like to go and just be a stone. Don't talk to me. I'm not going to say anything. I just want to be a stone just somewhere near Krishna. And some people may have that. And a tree is a bit like that also. In some realms, in some locations, a tree could be there. I will produce fruits and flowers, but that's it. So that is also a choice made by people. Each of the species that is available in this world is a direct consequence of the possible choices that we can make. Each subtle body gives rise to a gross body, which is a particular species, 8,400,000 of them. Each of those has a different mentality. The species don't exist on their own just for fun. This material world is created like that to facilitate us. We have that number of different possible desires and flavors that we wish to experience, so Krishna creates that. Now, innate in us is also that propensity for Shantaras. So it is one of the genuine rasas. And these are the five rasas, but then there are also seven secondary rasas. Chivalry and ghastliness and those. So we're giving like a very brief overview here. There is so much more detail that one could get into to understand the intricacies of the rasas and how ghastliness is something that can serve Krishna, how horror, how anger, how those things can be in some way connected to Krishna. But yes, those elements are there also. There is a transcendental anger that is exhibited by Srimati Radharani, which is completely different to the anger found in this world under certain circumstances, for the increase of pleasure, ultimately. So there, it's a deep subject, spiritual world. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhuji?
Hare Krishna. I wanted to ask, because you mentioned this word choice, am I correct in understanding that if I were to go to the spiritual world, they would be able to choose what their relationship with Krishna would be, or is it simply that, I mean, my understanding so far is that you completely surrender and whatever your, you know, kind of maybe individual relationship with Krishna is like in the spiritual world, that's what you're doing. But you mentioned, like, you know, one could choose some to the rest, like that. How much is it kind of up to us or up to one individual?
Yes. In our practices in the Bhagavatam, there are different processes given. Even in the Gita, it talks about multiple different processes for different people. It all depends on what you want. For example, in the second canto, there's a process of yogic meditation described in the beginning, which starts with yam, niyam, asana, dharana, pratyahara, all of the initial stages of yogic practice, rules, regulations, withdrawing the senses from the sense objects and achieving a certain stage of equanimity, yogic trance. And then one can contemplate on a specific form of the Lord within the heart. And that form of the Lord will be a form either, as the yogis recommend, of a certain dimension, of a certain form, or it can be a particular form of the Lord that we have heard about, a particular form, Lord Narasingadev perhaps, or whoever we are attracted to. Now, a person can choose that form and try to develop a relationship with that form. Another person could say that rather than following this process, I would like to serve my Guru Maharaj, understanding that he is in line with Srila Prabhupada, the six Goswamis. Ultimately, we are Rupanugas. And Rupa Goswami has explained how one can advance in spiritual life. He's explained that as one gets into more of the spontaneous levels of devotional service, and in the Nectar of Instruction, it's also mentioned that one takes shelter of a resident of Vrindavan. And they are guided, they're trained, they're guided, their future development is mentored. And they learn the arts and the secrets of a particular flavor of devotional service, which they then offer to the Lord. So that is also a valid option. Different people have different desires. Some are drawn to the Lord's pastimes in a particular avatar. We don't have time to go into those, but we have examples in Chaitanya Leela of a Ram Bhakta who could not think of anyone but Lord Ram. Even while Krishna was there, the supreme, complete, whole Krishna, and Lord Ram is non-different in one sense, and Lord Chaitanya gave him his blessings. I bless you to achieve your satisfaction in service with Lord Ram. So there's no loss or diminution. When we hear of these hierarchies, you know, the hierarchies of the spiritual world, the realms, we sometimes think that I only want the topmost, the best. But the topmost is quite a tricky place. The topmost requires a level of surrender and a level of complete detachment from any personal preferences, that it is an exceptional place. It requires exceptional qualification. And ultimately, whichever situation we're in, whichever of the Haridham planets we're in, even if we're floating around in the Brahma Jyoti, that's not a permanent situation. We are still separate from this material world. It is still the transcendental realm. And if one is engaged in a relationship with Lord Ram, that will be eternally satisfying. Bali Maharaj is eternally engaged in a relationship with Vamandev, who comes to protect him. He's completely satisfied by that. There is, for a particular person, they are completely satisfied when they're situated in the position they should be in. And, you know, in this world, we can change jobs. We can move from, you know, one profession, one job to another. It would be a shame if the spiritual world, we had one desk, one office, one stereotyped role. One can imagine that even within a role, there will be such variegatedness there, such unlimited variety. So if, you know, as we go through our life, we have a desire to interact with the Lord in this way, in that way, in a different way, maybe the Lord wants us to be something different. The Lord wanted Jay and Vijay to come here as demons. He arranged his devotees to come here and play the part of demons, just so he could have a good fight with them. So that sounds like a change of role to me. So spiritual world is not a stereotyped, rigid place. Rather, when we talk about going back to Godhead and perhaps being situated in our original sthayi bhav in connection with Krishna, we are talking about a sort of a category of a particular situation which will facilitate such a variety of service from that point. It's an ever-expanding place, an ever-expanding service. Anything else? Yes, just behind you. That's it.
Hi. I've been doing the monk challenge, these other guys. I've learned bits and pieces throughout the week, obviously as much as you can learn within 7 days. Any questions I had, you kind of covered just then. So I just want to say thank you really to yourself, to among the devotees, everyone at the manor, Prabhupada and Krishna, just for having me here. And, yeah, starting to teach me and take me on this spiritual journey. But thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure having all of you here. Certainly we've all enjoyed your association, enthusiasm, and such a nice bunch of people. It's really, really nice. I hope this isn't the last visit from yourselves. I hope you'll be coming back regularly and having prasadam with us. And
yeah, I've been coming here for sort of 3 months every Sunday.
Right.
Sometimes on my own, sometimes with the family.
Yes.
So yeah, I've had a nice little taste of what it's all about. And well, like what Arnold Schwarzenegger said, I'll be back.
So. Yes. Come back, take association of the devotees, and then make sure you don't come back to the material world.
Yes. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna.